Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Three, two,
that's right.
One.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bletzer here with Doug Larson and Chris Moore. We have our guest Brian McKenzie from CrossFit Endurance and Athlete's Cell. Before we get to Brian, I want to bring Robbie Froman up here real quick. Come on, Robbie. Quit playing around on the iPad. We're doing this podcast with a live audience for the first time.
As you can see, these are real people.
We have real people
real
sitting
people.
Around. We were doing this to try and raise some money for CrossFit for Hope, and Robbie's going to give us it was Robbie Froman's idea, so I'm going to let him give you a quick rundown. He's trying to put his credit card information
you gotta get
to be
Robbie.
The first donator.
Here, you want me to read that off for you?
Yeah,
get on a microphone.
Yeah, let's read off that credit card. It's an American Express.
Yeah.
Real quick, if you go to CrossFit for Hope, I think it's crossfitforhope.com. If you just Google that, you'll find it. And then you can search for the Barbell Shrugged profile and you can donate there. You can donate on your own. You can set up your own profile and have and try to get people to donate money under your name or whatever. It doesn't matter. Just get some money going that way. The money's for cancer research for kids at St. Jude Children's Hospital here in Memphis, Tennessee. So it's real close to home for us. But I really appreciate that CrossFit really made it their goal to raise money specifically for this one piece of research.
Tremendous cause.
Robbie, I left you with nothing to say. And you're just standing there. I'm just filling up. All right.
What can I add to that?
I don't know. What can you add to that? Were you even listening?
I was listening to everything. I hinge on your every word.
I was talking to the microphone.
Talking to the microphone. You need to put some shoes on and get some chairs for these people. Standing up could be detrimental to your health. Standing up could be detrimental to your health. You're not recording.
That is not
sorry.
What we went
we
over today.
No, we didn't talk to.
Don't
I think
you know
this is
shit about
cause.
Endurance running, Robbie?
I know a ton. Enough that I shouldn't even go tomorrow. I have to catch up on everything I didn't know today. This is a great cause. It's obviously close to us in Memphis. I think Mike mentioned that. But if you're listening to this podcast, if you can make a donation, even if it's just a small amount, this is a fantastic thing to get behind, and we would really appreciate your support. And I really appreciate the willingness of Brian to come out and do this after a long day of teaching a bunch of people how to run better, and also the Barbell Shrug guys, who it's pretty nice having in Memphis. But to take the time to do this and
I also
mention
had a very long
podcast,
day. I drank like 4 beers before you got here.
That so I don't even know.
Prime.
I don't even know where to go with that.
So tired.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Robbie.
Robbie from
Hey, Robbie.
Hey. All right, let's get to it. So we got Brian McKenzie here. How long? So you've been an endurance athlete for a long time, an endurance coach. When I say a long time.
You like to run,
but
I actually don't like running.
I want to hear your history a little
now
bit.
Now we got a lot in common, Brian.
Yeah, see,
I fucking
I knew
running.
How to sweet talk you.
That's right. My pants are halfway off already.
I just got enamored with the fact that I sucked at something. You know, I told the story today where I was kind of roped into doing a triathlon, a sprint distance triathlon, in like 2001, 2002, and I. Successfully overtrained for a sprint distance triathlon, which is a like 800 meter swim, a 12 mile bike ride, and a 5K run. I was running like in excess of like 50 miles a week, riding my bike like 60 plus miles a week, and like I swam twice during the week and maybe 2,000 yards at a time.
Did you get that workout off a website somewhere?
No. This was like just following my buddies and doing what my buddies did and the guys who kind of grandfathered me in and fathered me into the endurance thing. And I came out of the water like with the 10th fastest time. I successfully lost about 50 places on the bike. At which point on the run, I was passed by several overweight people who encouraged me to keep going. And that in itself, I was like, and you know, and as an athlete and somebody who was pretty successful as a swimmer, I was like, I was just humiliated. And I was like, this fucking sucks.
Yeah.
I will not be beaten by fat dudes.
I'm either gonna have to stop this or I'm gonna have to do something about it. And that's kind of where it all.
So you had a swimming background.
Yeah, I had a swimming background. I was a short course swimmer. I literally would not go over 100 meters or 100 yards because I was younger. But the coach could not get me to go over 100 yards because I'd blow up after 50. Mm-hmm. I could probably hold my breath for about 50 yards going balls out, and then right after that it's just everything tanked, and I could hold on long enough just to still finish like in first place, but like that would deteriorate very quickly as they were closing in.
Yeah. Isn't volume kind of the name of the game in a lot of endurance swimming communities
A lot of swimming
even
programs
for short course?
Yeah. A lot of programs. And it wasn't that I wasn't doing low volume, but I definitely was not doing the amount of training required by the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. Nor were most of my teammates, where we would just skip laps, skip things that we didn't want to do.
Bunch of quitters.
When you've got 30, 40 kids in a pool swimming laps, the coach has no idea what's going on, you know, and everybody's been there. Whoever was a swimmer, you know, it's the same thing.
Dude, it works the same when you're a fat kid doing peewee football. You're like, the coach is like screaming at you, 10 more. A 45-year-old guy with a whistle screaming at 13-year-old boys. They go, you just kind of hang back behind the fat guy playing defensive line. Like to hide yourself from his vision. Yeah. You just kind of sneak the sprints in towards the end of practice. The same thing.
It's the exact same thing. Yeah.
So were you always resistant to that amount of volume just because you were tired and young and didn't want to do it, or you
Not
thought it was a bad
no,
idea?
No, I just hated it because I got exhausted and I just wasn't built for doing long distance. But when I went into triathlon, I had the great idea, like every other endurance athlete that I know, that you do a short course event. And then the next thing you know, you're like, fuck, I'm signing up for an Ironman. I went from doing something that literally took me like an hour and like 10, 15 minutes to I want to go and do the 10-hour, 11-hour range.
So you signed up for an Ironman after the sprint
I literally signed. I went down and watched my buddy finish the Oceanside Half Ironman. And I was like, I am signing up for this one next year. And I had a buddy sign me up a month later at Ironman Canada because he had to have somebody sign you up in line up there. And so I went and the following year inevitably did Ironman Canada. And then after Ironman Canada, I read the stories on these guys doing 100-mile, 50-mile runs to the middle of the mountains.
Yeah.
And instead of doing Ironman again, I was like, that's bullshit. Nobody's running 50 to 100 miles through the mountains in a race.
Those Indians in Mexico, bro.
Born to Run wasn't even around at this point.
Like, okay.
The community of ultra runners was still like around the 10,000 mark.
A little bit of a hipster thing to say.
Yeah.
Well, I knew about the Native Americans or the running in Mexico before that guy wrote that book, bro.
You knew about the Spartans, bro.
I knew, bro.
You knew about all that. I know. We all did.
Fuck yeah. I mean, dude, went to bed grade school reading those stories. Fuck. Who didn't?
That was, you know, and I did long, slow. I mean, I trained traditional model. I did all of that stuff, but I just found I was just tore up, you know, and I finally was just like, hey, what am I doing? And why can't I squat anymore? Why does 75 pounds squatting in a Smith machine wreck me? Why am I, what? And this is, you know, I had done some powerlifting when I was younger with my old man. And I mean, he had an old school power. We had a powerlifting gym.
Oh, sweet.
We'd go down to Metrics down in Newport Beach where, you know, Connolly started the Metrics gym and, you know, working out with all the bodybuilders. And I mean, I had like, a, you know, 350, 360 squat when I was about 18, 19 years old. Which wasn't bad for a swimmer kid.
So you didn't go into endurance sports weak.
Like a 108-pound kid? How big were you at that time?
About 170, 175.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then it got, at your worst, what were you squatting? When you did all this
like literally, after the Ironman, I put 25s on each side.
Holy shit, that's not even a joke.
No, and it's not even 75 pounds because it's a Smith machine, so it's counterweighted, right? So you unrack the thing, and I get there, and you can't even squat right, and I get down about
Where's
half.
Where's my son at? I'm pretty sure I get him to do that shit.
I know,
this is He's 2 years old, man.
I know. And so I just was wrecked, and a buddy of mine was just laughing at me. He goes, dude, take these aminos, you know, so you can recover quicker in your body, you know. And I'm like, all right, yeah. And I'm just so embarrassed about the whole thing, and I'm like, I got to do something about this. So that's when was like, how did I lose all of what I thought, you know, what I thought strong was not strong.
So did you start coaching? At what point did you start coaching? Did you start doing strength training and combining that with some endurance stuff, and then you started coaching, or?
Yeah,
How'd that all come about?
I got into the personal training gig about 2000, 2001. I started getting paid to do it. Where, you know, I had buddies in my dad's garage gym. I'd train and we'd do the crazy supersets, you know, and all that stuff. But it got serious.
Physique guy?
No, no.
Like, I was a picture of you on the no, early version of internet, like shredded abs, no, like all oiled up. You can look like me.
Yeah, no.
Sign up for my personal training consultation practice.
We were more kind of like you're thinking, but we just didn't. I mean, dude, I've got the Louis Simmons VHS tapes of the bench.
I do too, dude. Yeah. Dude.
I'm not shitting.
And Dave Tate's old box set.
Dude, I've got all that. All that.
Just meatheads rambling about silly shit like 18 hours.
Totally. And we do those 20 rep squat sets with your 10 rep mat blackout and all that. You know, it was just whatever. We did all that.
Right there.
Right. See?
Absolutely.
Dude, I've been there. And mm-hmm. you know,
super squats.
And all of it was gone. He's like, I lost it all.
Why should I do 20 rep squats? And the coach goes, shut up. That's why. You want to be a winner or do you want to be like you are right now?
Because I said so.
Because I said so.
Yeah. That's for all the people that don't really know like the old way of endurance and don't really understand the new CrossFit endurance model and how they differ, can you just like give a brief review of each one?
Traditional endurance training is built off of volume. So you would just, you know, you're going to go out, you're either going to ride your bike, you're going to lace up your shoes, and you're going to go out and you're going to run or ride or swim for an extended period of time. Then you're going to go on a traditional linear progression. The next week, I'm going to up it just a little bit, and I'm going to continue in this fashion until I've reached set mileage that for whatever event I'm going to do. Let's say you're doing a marathon. Well, most people in the marathon world will set their sights on doing a 20-mile run prior to doing a marathon. It's an understandable thing. I get why everybody wants to do it. I've done it. Whatever.
Yeah, it's intuitive.
Yeah. And then you go and you start playing around with things for a few years and you start toying. You know, I was introduced to Romanoff, who created Pose Method Running, and he...
He's Russian, so...
Yeah, he is Russian.
He's got to be right.
He's got to be right, man. You don't hear a man talk with that accent like, this guy's full of shit. Same reason you don't hear...
It's very hard to understand, but...
Russian guys sound like they know their science, and British guys sound smart as shit. And Americans just sound like whatever. A guy saying with a British accent can be saying whatever the fuck... Who it doesn't matter. I got to develop my British accent further. That's going to be my key to everything.
Just go spend a few weeks over there.
Let's go.
You know, I go right now. It only takes me a weekend and I'm fucking speaking English. Proper. Queen's English.
Oh, let's go do that, dude. We'll go find a pub. Get fucked up. Can you bring Kelly along?
Maybe.
We'll get supple. There you go. We'll get supple in Britain. I like it.
So how'd you run across Romanoff? How'd you meet that guy?
So that triathlon, I had developed IT band syndrome, had a little plantar fasciitis going on, you know, and I was just a mess. And a buddy of mine had gone to a clinic of his, and he had flown back, and this guy's loaded. He's like, hey, I'm flying this fucking Russian guy out. You're doing the seminar. I'm paying for it. You're going to freak out. It's amazing. This is unreal. And came up.
This is pre-CrossFit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This, okay. Wait. This is like 2001, 2002. Okay. And
so this all happened in a very short period of time. Did the sprint try? Did the Ironman?
Yeah, well, I did the sprint try, and within 2.5 years, I'd done the full Ironman. Two years, I did the full Ironman. And then I had met Romanoff right after that sprint.
Oh, okay.
And so Kip came home, and he gets out, and he shows me this running math thing. He looks like a little bunny rabbit, just like running down the street. And I'm like, what happened to you? And he's like, no, you got to try it. It's much more efficient. And so I started playing with it. We didn't really figure it out. And then Romanoff showed up. I did one weekend with him, and I was just blown away. Like, how am I not in pain right now? Like, I've been in pain since this triathlon ended, and one weekend I'm not in pain. And so that just spun my head. And, you know, I was going to school and learning what I was learning, and, you know, a lot of it made sense, and then a lot of it didn't make sense.
Tell me about it, man. Fuck.
Right?
These schools.
So
not for saying, no. Your formal strength and conditioning education. Did you get do the whole traditional thing? Like,
nope,
no traditional thing.
No, I was on the 9-year plan that literally, you know, just pop fizzle, and I said, fuck this.
Did you major in philosophy?
I tried. No,
what was your major?
No,
I'm curious.
I didn't major. I dropped out.
He said, fuck this shit.
Yeah.
You went punk rock, man.
That's what it is, bro.
That's what it is. You were unscared to say, fuck this.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yes.
Can I ask you?
Yeah.
Because I'm the best at derailing this shit, so why not do it right now?
Yeah.
What are you unscared of? I want to know. Because it's not just running, because running's not scary. This has got to be like a metaphor for other deeper shit.
Actually, it is scary. All's running is your fear of falling.
Fuck yeah.
That's all it is, bro.
I'm scared of falling, man.
Yeah. We all
that's because I'm very heavy and gravity rides my ass really hard.
Gravity works on you a little bit more than it does.
I fall
me.
Harder than you, so
you
I'm
can.
Pretty, I'm more unscareder than
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I need to work. Well, I need to work on being more unscareder than
yeah,
you.
Yeah. What am I not unscared of? Is you know pretty much I what I mean everything we deal with fear on a daily basis. We deal you know, and it was actually a word that Starrett came up with. Dave Castro had mentioned something about cyclists wearing arm warmers and cyclists being gay for wearing arm warmers, and Kelly kind of perked up as we were at this dinner, and he looked at Dave and he said, "Well, Dave, I live in San Francisco and my gym's outside, and during the winter I wear arm warmers because I like to coach all day, and I pull them off." And he goes, "I'm not gay."
So fuck you. Man, wear whatever you want.
So he said, "Dave Castro, I'm unscared of you. And I'm going to get some pink arm warmers and put the words unscared of Dave Castro on them." So I, being at the table and having a few connections in the apparel industry, went and had some pink arm warmers made and sent them to Kelly.
That's gangster, man.
It was gangster.
It was gangster. I love that shit.
Yeah.
So you're talking about falling.
Yeah.
Being unscared of falling. Are you referring to the pose and... And the feeling of falling when you basically start doing pose?
Yeah, I mean it's running is what it is. It's just running, and it's the ability to let yourself fall and be able to land in a good position, in that position of high stability. The unfortunate part is that most of us don't, and we land well in front of that, which means we have to get back to that original position to where we can fall from, and any deviation of that, it's like a wheel, right? Mm-hmm. A wheel ain't gonna work real well if there's something out in front of it, mm-hmm. right? The more flat that wheel is, the more friction it creates. Mm-hmm. So if you essentially are landing out in front of yourself or getting out in front of yourself, you're creating more friction on the ground. Therefore, you're gonna have to generate more energy, more muscle contraction in order to move forward, which is in essence why most people hate running.
Yeah, so you're getting a braking force, and then that's one of the main things that contributes to a lot of people's injuries and joint pain and whatnot.
Bam. Yeah.
Is that also why people tend to translate up and down a lot more with regular style running than pose running?
Yeah.
They have to kind of travel over that kickstand.
Because
stand.
It's an abrupt, and if you watch it on video in slow motion, you'll see it. You'll mm-hmm. see that abrupt stop, but that bouncing becomes when people start trying to push off, mm-hmm. starting to generate vertical force versus right. transmitting into horizontal.
Right. So we kind of just jumped into that topic. Can you kind of explain from the beginning the whole concept of not kind of going up and down with your center
you're
mass while you're
taking,
running.
So you're taking, let's just say you're alternating feet jumping rope, right? Which is an easy concept for everybody to do, or just jumping rope. You're taking that energy mm-hmm. versus going back up, you're just pulling. Mm-hmm. So you're redirecting that energy with the hamstring or pulling your foot up mm-hmm. underneath you, which allows you to efficiently start to move, but like keep your body in motion. Now, getting mm-hmm. that on a tilt, putting that on a lean or falling, mm-hmm. then being able to be in that high stability position mm-hmm. and redirect that allows you to run essentially more efficiently.
So you're spending less energy per step, and you're kind of just gliding smooth as opposed to going up and down, just like
absolutely
taking smaller jumps, if you will.
Take Kenyan runners who have about 4 centimeters of vertical oscillation mm-hmm. versus American runners yeah. that have about 4 inches of vertical travel.
I knew there was something about those guys.
To preface that, you're talking over long distances. Say they do run a marathon, and they run fast as shit for 2 hours, and their head only moves that far up and
yeah.
down for 2 hours straight,
yeah.
as opposed to this far, like
yes.
a lot of American or non-pose runners run.
That'll yeah. accumulate, that's for sure.
Yeah. That's a lot of up and down. In mm. fact, it's like going up and over the Empire State Building like 3 times. In a marathon.
And that, dude, that sounds hard. Fuck.
Yeah, well, there's nothing. There's
I don't
actually.
Want to do that.
There's actually, and to your point, there's actually physiologically nothing really healthy other than on the mental side of clearing your head with doing something in the 26.2 mile range.
What do you mean? Specify real quick.
Physiologically, you're just tearing yourself apart, breaking yourself down to such a, in such a way
that you're not adding to your fitness. You mean?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, it's just
Making things hard on yourself.
You're just making things pretty tough, and the ability to recover from that is going to take something like 30 days on a total level.
Sure.
You know, so there's not a whole lot of like, and I mean, this is coming from somebody who's run 100 miles, so you know, I get it, but I also understand that I like suffering.
There's a huge cost to this. Yeah.
There's a major cost.
When you do that, you can't. You do a 100-mile race. When's the next time you can do that without, like, how long does it take you to recover from that shit?
That's a long time, but I mean, there are people who are literally running 100-milers every month, which is, Dean Karnazes has gone, who's a good friend, goes, and he'll do Western States, which is one weekend, and within 2 weeks, he's doing Badwater, which is, you know.
What do you think of these dudes like Eddie Izzard, the comedian? He's the best example I know of. The guy's got a lot of money. He's told all the jokes he's going to ever write. He dressed up like a girl and got on stage and made people laugh. What do you do from there? He decides, like 2 years ago, he ran like 50 marathons in 50 days. How do people do that shit? I'm confused. Is this fake? You get up every day and you run a marathon? How do you do that, dude?
It's just you build yourself to do it and you just keep going. You're one motivated human being.
My humble primate mind that has run maybe 10 miles total in my life doesn't understand what's going on with this shit.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that unless
I really
you
don't.
Actually
I don't understand
put,
it's possible.
I understand, which is why I mean, what do you squat?
My best all time.
Give it to me, baby. Come on. Best all time.
Weighing a very sexy 370 pounds, I squatted like 980.
980.
Yeah.
I don't comprehend 980. Nobody in this room who probably has never squat over 500 pounds does not know what it's like to have 980 pounds even put on their back.
There are funner things to do.
I
never shit myself.
No, but you know, Dean will tell you straight up. I mean, I've taken him through Badwater, and he will literally tell. I mean, he looked at me 3/4 of the way through this thing. He's like, "What are you still doing here, dude? Why are you here?"
I tell you what I'll do. I'll show up to you when he's races. I'll say, "You know what the key to this shit is? First, I wear minimal shoes, right? And I do my mobility first, and I say, I just got to visualize this shit. I'll visualize them one by one for 99 miles." That's the easy part. That's what I think. You agree with me, Mike?
I think you're right on point.
I asked Mike that question. Mike's the guy who says, "Oh, I saw you wrote a book, Chris." I'm like, "Yeah, right on. I wrote a book. Yeah, you're right, Mike." And he goes, "I wrote a book too." Well, let me clarify. I got the outline done. That's the hardest part. I was like, "Yeah, that's the hard part, but it's also kind of hard to put it down and write it."
So bringing that back around, it's like, so the traditional model is, more.
I was about to bring that up.
And where we come back, where I fell in was like, okay, so I was all banged up. Things weren't working out. I go and I learn to run more efficiently and effectively. There's never, ever been anybody who's ever had a standard in running except for what Romanoff's presented. And this was years ago. And so here we now have a model for a standard, much like a squat or a deadlift, which, some minor things might change for each individual based on lever lengths, things like that. But the fundamental thing is that we all run the same way. It's just like a deadlift or a back squat. There's a beginning, there's an end. He had opened my eyes to many things, and the fact that I had gotten as weak as I had gotten, and I didn't like that. I was not okay
it's
with
not
that.
Cool. Yeah.
No, it wasn't cool at all. Mm. And you know, if we were friends, you'd probably smack me, you know, and be like, "Dude, what'd you
do?" We're friends, dude.
Yeah,
we're already friends.
Well, back then, I'm talking about.
Oh,
back
yeah,
then.
Okay. Yeah.
Were you resistant to that? Were you like a new way of running? What do you mean? Is that possible? I mean, there's got to be
only
one way to do it.
No, because I wasn't a
runner.
No, because I was not a runner.
Okay.
I was a swimmer, remember? And I was somebody, and I getting roped into doing, you know, endurance events and, you know, just doing what everybody else was doing, which is primarily what everybody, you know, does.
Well, the cool kids in high school are talking into, "Hey, man, why don't you come over here and run a marathon with us?" "Oh, man, I got to get home, man. My mom's
expecting
me."
Well, it was more like, "You got to do an Ironman." I'm like, "Are you out of your mind? I'm, you know, just doing a spinning class right now, dude.
Like, I ain't got to do nothing. I'm a grown-ass man. I ain't doing nothing."
So in your book, you very clearly lay out that kind of the old way of doing things is volume first and then speed training and then drill skills and technique is third by far. And kind of the new way.
If it ever exists.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you've kind of flipped it on its head basically. And
yes.
Drill skills and technique is first. Interval training and speed training is number two. And then volume comes after you've handled those two things. Once you have good technique and you can run fast, then you add fitness to that good technique and that speed.
You pretty much nailed it. It's like, but
hey, good job, Doug. Fuck yeah.
The essential right, thing, the thing here is that it's like, look, if you can run well, if you can show that you can run well and you can't, you're not getting injured and you're not banging things up, and you can go out and handle, hey, 10 kilometers of running or 5 kilometers of running, great. Let's go there. Let's start this. But if you turn into a train wreck just to get through that 10 kilometers, you have no business doing that 10 kilometers.
Right.
It's not, it's like, hey, I'm not going to start a West Side barbell, you know, follow what Chris here is doing if I've never really lifted weights, except that's what the endurance community literally will go do is try and emulate what it is a lot of these elite level runners and endurance athletes do.
Yeah, the long, slow distance method, the old way, where if you take it and you're not talking about running, you talk about something like an air squat and you add lots of air squats first and then you do them really fast and then you learn how to do them correctly last.
Yeah.
That sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, right?
But with both running, it just seems to make sense.
You're not a hard sell.
You actually see that in CrossFit a lot. People in training in general, it's like they want people just want to go, oh, what's first running do?
Yeah.
I'll just do that program.
Because
2 weeks later,
they can't get out of bed. Abs.
Yeah. So people make the same mistake. It's not just endurance sports. It's like sports overall. They just want to like find out what that guy does that's the best, and then I'll just do that. That makes the most sense. I mean, that's what I used to do with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Ronnie Coleman.
We've all been there. We've all been there. We've all done it. It's not, you know, but you're right. I mean, I was at, you know, it's funny. I met Rich was in town a little while ago, and we got out from lunch in Southern, you know, in a random place in Costa Mesa, and some kid comes out and goes, hey, you're that guy who won that thing. And he goes, hey, Rich Froning, nice to meet you.
Right.
And the guy's like, whatever his name was, he goes, dude, you made me want to do CrossFit. I want to go win the CrossFit games. And he goes, yeah, you should do that. Like, people really don't, like, they're
he didn't feel threatened by it? Like, oh, you want to take my crown? This little shit, actually, this little kid, is threatening me and my livelihood?
And he threw his shirt off and it was on.
He's like, it's on, man.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way. I want credit for taking my shirt off next to the sexiest guy in the world, because I'm not the sexiest guy in the world or the fittest guy in the world. Took my shirt off next to that guy, dude.
There you go.
With caramel donuts in hands.
Real thoughts about Rich just came out.
Caramel donuts.
The ridges in his abs have ridges.
Yeah, I know.
Wait,
he's a handsome guy.
So that the CrossFit endurance model, the one that I just laid out, was that Romanoff's thinking? You kind of tweaked it, or did you come up with that yourself, or is that a combination of ideas you got from other people and you're kind of just known for
That is a culmination of things I've learned from Romanoff, things I've done with Kelly, things I've done with I went to a Mike Mahler seminar. Everything I've done, things I've learned from what I've read out of West Side Barbell. Yeah. And that's another thing is that where we see a lot of deficiencies even within the endurance realm is that where that lack of strength is. Mm. And where we've seen a lot more success with things of using more of like a West Side concept for strength training, because there's such a lack of strength within the endurance community and implementing things like that. Mm-hmm. So I've learned from a ton of people, and it's a constant evolving thing, but it's also enough of where I was willing to challenge ideas and or even things that I didn't quite understand, and then put them to a test and see how it worked. And if it didn't work, we got rid of it. And if it did work, we kept it. And I mean, dude, we were just doing squats and deadlifts and trying to run long, and that one didn't work out so well. We were doing trying
I say
to do,
the only thing you can do, man, is you got a picture. There's a pool in your mind. Picture a pool, right?
Pool.
You got me?
I got the pool.
Cool pool, saltwater pool, Southern California, margaritas in hand.
Got
right?
it. Got it. Parents
right.
got one.
At some point, you're like, well, fuck.
I want to swim. I'm there right now. All right.
You jump in the pool, right or wrong. You get a starting point. You don't fucking waste time being consumed with, am I doing the perfect thing I could be doing? At some point, you just act. And once you're in the thing, you try this method, you try running in a separate way. Once you're in the thing and you experience it, then you just, the tinkering process takes over.
Absolutely.
People put too much emphasis on the starting point. Just start.
Yeah.
Be humble and start somewhere safe.
Yeah.
And then just tinker till you find what works for you.
Yeah. Or even go out and break yourself and then find out the way I found out. You know, I mean,
if you break yourself, I think
that's much more common. Much more common is, I mean, that's how I do it. I break myself.
Yeah.
And then I have to baby it for a while.
That's how you
and
do
then,
it.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah,
that's, that's the motivation you need. You got to break yourself first.
You got to do it.
Yeah. I mean, all's injury is just you breaking the rules of Mother Nature. That's all it is. Yeah. You just saying, you know what? I just stepped outside of what it is I should have been doing.
Dude, sometimes you get bummed where you're like, man, if I could hear myself say this when I was 21, fuck, I wouldn't be broken. I could be awesome.
Dude, I was explaining that today. I'm like, at 39, like, things are much different from when they were 25. Trust me. Like, I was, like, invincible at that point.
Like, I was about to say, be like, you see my elbow that won't bend or flex? Yeah. Or all, you know, won't extend all the way, won't flex away? Let me help you not do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've been here. It didn't fucking work out.
Speaking of breaks.
So, yeah, let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we'll get more. We're going to let some people in the crowd ask some questions.
Cool.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the break. Mike Bledsoe here. Just a reminder to go over to barbellshrug.com. There's a video version of this podcast, which you probably picked up on, and you can go and view that. And a lot of times we make references or we're showing a movement or something like that. And if you're watching the video, you can see what's going on there. What was the other thing, CTP? What am I going to tell those folks?
Technique wad.
Oh, yeah. If you're watching the video version, there's a technique wad. You'll learn something new about how to do a snatch or a clean and jerk or a muscle up or something like that. We'll usually put that in the middle of the show, so make sure to check that out. Thanks for joining us and enjoy the rest of the show. All right, welcome back to Barbell Shrug. Still here with Brian McKenzie, CrossFit Endurance and Athlete Cell Coach. We're going to get into some questions, and I wanted to get a question in right on the front end.
Let's do this.
It's nothing crazy. I do have two questions. Right. Is where did CrossFit actually come in? So you did a sprint try. You had a background in like powerlifting.
Yep.
You discovered Romanoff. You started doing working on pose technique, mm-hmm. Which actually kind of applies to every movement there ever is, right?
Yeah, everything's the same basically.
Yeah. And then so at what point like in that progression were you introduced to CrossFit, and how did that play a role in your training? And we were talking about tweaking before the break. Like, how did you start
that? Like, I was doing the squats and deadlift thing and benching, you know, and like just doing traditional like strength and conditioning and trying to do endurance. That didn't work out. And then we started playing around with other things, and all of a sudden I found the kettlebell movement like 2005, and I got freaky into the kettlebell thing, and like I was bringing kettlebells.
Is that from Mahler?
I ended up going to a Mahler seminar, but I was following all the likes of like Diesel Crew and like Jason C. Brown and you know all that stuff. And I got into it pretty good for what I was doing. And you know, we played with that, and then through that kettlebell movement, you know, and being on the internet, you know, you see CrossFit.com, and I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Did you already know Kelly and those guys at this point?
No.
No.
I met Kelly in 2007. In 2005 was when I first saw CrossFit, went one foot in, might have rhabdoed myself one
2007?
Foot out. 2007? No, 2005.
Dude, I totally rhabdoed myself.
Was it a GHD setup?
No, dude, it was like an Angie something. Like, it was like...
Which one's Angie? Which one's that?
The hundreds.
Yeah, 100 pull-ups, push-ups.
One that crushed me was at 100 wall balls.
Yeah.
150 wall.
150, yeah.
Yeah.
With my Majewski.
And so, yeah, I did the workout, and I couldn't move for like a week, and, you know, it was pretty bad. And so I didn't do it again for a little bit, and then went back to it, and then we inevitably ended up going all in once we were conditioned enough. We'd had the athletes conditioned enough. The training had more or less evolved in my gym. I started my own gym in 2005, uh-huh. which was Genetic Potential, and then we...
I see. Yep, that's the current name of your podcast, right?
No, that's a TV show, but yeah.
Or the TV show.
Yeah, whatever the fuck it is.
Whatever the fuck, man.
That was essentially how I got into the CrossFit thing. And then in 2006, we went all in and we just decided to start CrossFitting everybody, mm-hmm. And use that model and see how well it worked. Mm-hmm. And that was all I did with my training leading into my second 100 miler.
Did you just do .com or did you change it to meet your needs?
No, we changed it to meet our needs. Okay. I'd followed .com for, you know, probably 3 to 6 months, and then went in and changed our knees, because based on what we were doing, we wanted to be able to get the sport specific work in and have it matter.
I'm sorry, who is we at this point?
Everybody at my gym. Okay. All the trainers, the coaches.
The royal we, Doug.
Yeah.
The royal we. That's your answer.
So it doing what we did, we had better results with the CrossFit than we had with anything else that we had done. Mm-hmm. And that's where that model.
What do you attribute that to?
I think it's the all around general strength and conditioning of the GPP of CrossFit and the intensity of it versus being and going out and doing a lot of the endurance work. You know, contrary to what most people think, doing 400s, 800s, things like that, that's a lot of aerobic work still. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, and then going out and being able to do tempo or time mm-hmm. trial runs, things like that, mm-hmm. is still highly aerobic stuff. And I think that was the perfect mesh. But it was the ability to pay attention to the athlete's performance and knowing when to back off, when not to, when to train, all of that.
Right. So is the claim of CrossFit Endurance, maybe not necessarily by you, but just like by people that follow your philosophy, is the claim that you can do this new model and still have the capacity that these other guys who just do super high volume have? Or is the claim that you can also be pretty good at endurance, but you'll probably have fewer injuries and you'll probably be better at all these other skills in other sports and other, you have other aspects of athleticism and not just be an endurance athlete?
You're not going to follow CrossFitEndurance.com and mm-hmm. go be a 2-hour marathoner. Mm-hmm. That I'm not going to put that on a website.
Okay.
That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Because
why is that?
Because the general public has no business going out and running 20 miles.
Okay.
Takes the general public.
It's just the fact that has been my experience with the amount of athletes I've trained and seen, mm-hmm. that 99% of them that aren't Rich Froning have no business doing the volume that Rich Froning's doing, because they're not in the position that Rich Froning's in at the end of the weekend, right? They're not in the position.
It's really odd how so many people are so eager to jump into it. Like, you know, the guy the whole event is named after, like the run to marathon, the old Greek story.
Yeah.
That guy fucking died. He died. Yeah. Why are you so eager just to casually do this?
Yeah.
Well, prepare for this?
Other shocking thing about this whole thing is that in the 80s, the average marathon time was 3:30.
Yeah.
It's over 4:30 now.
People are doing just enough to survive.
They're just surviving this thing where it's like, it's not, you're no longer really running at this point. You're
just
now
put a sticker on your car.
Yeah.
Or they're taking it easy.
26.2 or.
Well, they're all taking it easy because, like, fuck, we can't beat these Kenyans. What's the point?
Yeah. I'm not here to be the dream crusher either, but, you know, I'm putting out a program that, hey, you know what? We've got people who followed.com, CrossFitEndurance.com, and done a sub-3-hour marathon. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to get somebody who, there's a big difference between somebody who's following a website and who wants to go win a gold medal or get paid for a living to be an athlete. Those people are typically hiring coaches and working with a lot of like higher level professional people in order to get to their goals. You know,
I feel like when I hear people who don't really know the model that well, or don't really know you personally, haven't even been to the cert, but they kind of like hear about CrossFit Endurance like on the periphery, they think you never ever have to run long ever, and you can be an ultra endurance competitor and be good,
but
that's not true. You have to at some point go run some distance.
You're absolutely correct, but I'm very careful with my words and what it is I put out, because I don't want people and I mean, you understand, so we're having this conversation.
Sure.
Most people I can't have this conversation with, because they're just not willing to waver from their from their ideals and understand what reality is. Mm-hmm. And that's been, you know, I've found coaching isn't necessarily my ability to understand your physiology, because that's actually the fucking easy part. Mm-hmm. It's the ability to deal with you as a human being and your neurosis.
Absolutely.
And that's definitely the toughest part.
Because we've got Chris, we've got Mike, and how do I deal? Like, it's all different, and it's like,
I'm pretty fucking neurotic. I know that. What does that mean?
Yeah, coaching advice is situation specific, and people don't always accept their situation.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, I'm coaching 3 or 4 different CrossFit Games athletes this next year. It's like, how do I deal with Michelle Kinney? I'm not working with, but I'm just, because she's sitting right in front of me. And
hey, or, he's not worried about you.
You know, or I'm dealing with Brian Diaz or Jeremy Kinnick or whoever else I'm coaching, and I'm like, hey, these are all different people and all can handle different things, but all are dealing with different issues. And what are those issues? And what are your ideals, by the way? Well, obviously, they all want to win the games. Sure. But realistically, are they all willing to understand what the reality is? Is are we looking at the top three? Mm. Are we looking at the top 10? Are we looking at the top 15 or maybe even the top 20? Mm. Let's be realistic about it. And the realism of CrossFitEndurance.com is the fact that we can get people to events who feel 10 times better than they've ever felt doing these events and not thrashing themselves. Mm. In the process of doing it, and they still have lives, and they're still happy, and they're healthy, and that's what we've seen, and so that's what we put out.
Yeah, the volume's not too high. You're not going to get completely trashed from the training, and you're going to be able to live a normal life.
You got it.
Yep. Did that answer your question?
All right, guys, let's try and get some questions in here. Anyone have a question?
Yeah, that was a long answer.
Question from the crowd.
Lee, talking to Mike.
Oh, come up. Come up, please. Come
yeah.
up.
Yes. Give it.
Put your nose against the pop filter.
Get close.
Okay. I came to CrossFit having done lots of marathons and half Ironmans.
Right close.
Once I've started doing CrossFit, I don't have that desire anymore. Like, I love CrossFit in and of itself.
Imagine that.
So, my question to you is that enough, or do you have something that you're training for? Like, most endurance people usually say, my next thing is. Uh-huh. What's yours?
What's my next thing?
Yeah.
To live a very happy and healthy life. I love to surf. I love to still run, but I don't necessarily hate running. I like trail running. I like going out and running trail, and I like going out and riding my mountain bike. I like going out and surfing, but I have a life, and I'm on the road a lot now. So the priorities at some point have to change for people. At least that's what I've seen. My priorities had to change in order for me to either A, be successful with business and what it was that I believed in and what it was I wanted to do, or C, I was going to become the ultimate age grouper. You know, and I didn't want to be an ultimate age grouper. And I may go back to doing some ultra running. I'm not putting the stamp on it. That's just an open-ended thing, and, you know, it may or may not happen. But the fact, you know, like Erin went out today and, you know, ran 10 miles and just destroyed it. And she hadn't run 10 miles in over a year. Yeah. And I'm like, fuck, she's going to probably go run an ultra marathon and kick the crap out of every one of my times.
And
I'm
beat
gonna,
your time.
And I'm going to be like, damn it. Man,
that's
I gotta
not
train
the
again.
Coach, though. People exceed what you could ever do yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
most satisfying.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm never going to catch her anyway. I mean, she got two gold medals, and that's just, it is what it is, dude. I'm never going to have two gold medals.
That's a good point, dude, because people will see a runner or a high level CrossFitter. Like when I was powerlifting, I would see, like, oh, look at fucking Ed Cohen deadlift 950 pounds at weighing 200 pounds. Like, wow, I suck so much. Like, I'd compare myself to that guy. And if I'm a CrossFitter who's young, I compare myself to Rich Froning. Dude, the rule number one, be kind to yourself first.
Yeah.
Give yourself a fucking break for once.
Yeah.
That's not a fair expectation.
Yeah.
Come on, man, loosen up.
Yeah, all right, I'll take
here,
it.
Here, while we're waiting for our next question.
That was figured, like, not you, the audience.
I know. I was going to say, what are some of the biggest myths or misunderstandings about CrossFit endurance that we haven't covered so far? What kind of questions do you get that are just way off base?
The biggest one is what you addressed.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm glad
which
you opened that about the volume. You're never going to run long. You know, the fact is there's this thing called racing. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you are actually signed up for a marathon, it would probably behoove you to show up to a couple of races that are actually shorter than that to figure your shit out. Like, like, hey, you might want to run a 5K or 10K in a race setting, and even a half marathon. That'd probably be a good deal. Like, get in that race mode and understand what it's like to race. Mm-hmm. You know, the ultra marathon crowd never does anything under 50K. And, you know, I've sent a kid for the last year who, you know, wanted to do a 100 miler. Hey, he was doing 5Ks, 10Ks, 20Ks, 50Ks, you know, back and forth. And
too many Ks.
Yeah, but I mean, he went out and the kid won a 10K trail run, and this is something he never thought he'd ever do. Like, how do you go and do that? And he's like, that's the awesome part about what I do, and people just go way beyond what it was they thought they could do. Mm-hmm. And that's, I never saw that with what we were doing with traditional stuff. I just never saw it.
Very cool. Matt, you got a question?
Yeah, Brian, what in the CrossFit realm of basic lifts or Olympic lifts, what have you seen to be the single best to increase or to prevent injury of a runner and increase mobility, say in hips or IT band?
Squat. Nah, squat. Back squat, front squat, box squat, all of it. you know, box squat is probably one of my favorite things to do just because it teaches you how to squat correctly. And that's a fundamental tool we have to use with endurance athletes, because most endurance athletes are not using their hips correctly because of exactly what we talk about today. They're just working in a shortened range of motion for long periods of time. Their hips are shutting down. Then they go sit down and they don't have their hamstrings or their ass on. You know, feet are collapsed, flat feet. Their hips just don't work. They don't understand how to stabilize. Squat can literally fix all of that.
And
it doesn't beat you up very hard either.
What's that?
How much? Like, is once a week enough, or
that? I mean, that's such a just an individualized thing. It's like, you know, like how much do you squat a week?
Two to
three times.
So max every time.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Two to three times max every time for a power lifter. I'd say a couple times a week, maybe.
Go two times a week for now, at least.
Thanks, Coach.
Yeah.
I would emphasize that. If you're a runner who's in sort of season, you're running a lot, the box squat's perfect because it doesn't beat you up much, man. That's the point.
Yeah. Yep.
You can sit down, stand up, and it doesn't make you too sore. It doesn't take away much.
Brian, what's your mental state when you wad, when you sprint, or when you do an ultra? And can you describe to me what's running through your mind?
I'm looking for my breaking point, like what negative stuff I've got going on and how I counterbalance that negative. To the ability to see how I'm getting negative about something, whether it be short and really hard or long and really slower, a lot slower, where I mentally start to lose it and understanding it. My biggest thing is how I can flip that, how I can turn that negative into the positive. That's my biggest goal with everything I do.
How do you occupy your mind while you're running? I mean, you're running 100 miles.
100 miles, anything that was literally over 50, I liked 50 and beyond, and I liked to do a lot of solo stuff that wasn't even race settings. I think it's the ability to just say, you know, I'm here to suffer my brains out and find out exactly who I am and what I have today. And that was something that I literally got religious about. It was just trying to understand me on a better level.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Boom.
So how have your views on fueling changed since you started the whole CrossFit endurance method? Were you always kind of a, if we go back to like the traditional model versus the current model, how has that evolved over time? Maybe you could explain what the old model and the newer models are.
I was a high carb guy. High carb diet, and I was probably sitting around 10% body fat at about 175, 180, and fell into the CrossFit realm, started CrossFitting, and decided to go paleo and zone prescription and did the whole nine yards, weighed everything, played with everything. Where I dropped down to about 5% body fat, went up to about 185, 190, and performance went through the roof. I then discovered what inflammation was at that point. And then crushed a pizza about 3 months into the thing and almost blew myself up like a nuclear bomb. Head got bigger, got it almost blew out, and it was just like, well, what the fuck have I been doing for so long? Now, I don't, you know, I subscribe to a lot of this, but I'm as, you know, I'm crushing donuts, probably, you know.
Why'd you point at me, man? I'm the fat guy in the room, point at me.
I By the way, I crushed donuts. Because you said you were crushing caramel donuts with Rich Froning.
Oh, it was good.
Rich Froning and I were crushing Sidecar Donuts, which is a gourmet donut place in Orange County.
What's
together?
A, can I go there with you?
Yes, you can. If you come to Southern California, are going to Sidecar Donuts.
Fuck, dude. I gotta change my shorts.
There you go.
I will say this: that guy ate donuts with me. That guy being Rich.
Yeah.
Like a week before he went out to defend his title and to try to win fucking 300K. That's a hell of an athlete, man.
Rich never eats paleo though. Here, just so you're not standing here forever, go ahead and ask your question. Yeah. We can come back to this later on.
I was just curious, as far as like most of us do CrossFit at least once a day, how do you fit in the CrossFit endurance into that? Say just want to do like Olympic distance triathlon or just 10Ks or, you know, half marathons or something like that. How do you fit that into your regular one a day or wadding?
So the honest answer is you figure out a time to put it in, and you do that, and you learn whether you can recover or not. The other side of that is if you can't fit two workouts in a day, that you may want to set your priorities a little differently. Because the fact is if you're going to be CrossFitting and you want to do an endurance event, you're going to, you'll need to do some of it. You know, and there's plenty of people in here who've done really low mileage. So, I mean, Adam sitting over here did about 10 miles a week of running leading into a 100 miler. I'm not saying that's optimal.
But is it required to do two a days, or can you do
No. Okay. Not at all. There's just, you know, there's probably a few days a week you need to do a couple of two a days, or, you know, and I'd save the weekends for some of the longer effort stuff you would want to do with your endurance training, preferably the running and the riding if you're a triathlete.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Fantastic.
We all got questions?
Donuts.
Donuts.
David's
caramel donuts.
David.
And little chocolate donuts.
What do you got, David?
I got a question. David's still learning how to talk in the microphone.
Come on already.
Hey, Brian.
How are you? How you doing, David?
Hey, do you remember that time you did that endurance course? It was great.
Okay, so I was thinking about when you ran long distances and you couldn't squat at all.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
You had a barbell, what was it? 95 pounds, 75 pounds?
75. Just call it right. 75.
So when you're looking at, one of your athletes that is training for a marathon, how do you parallel their strength programming with their long distance?
What can they squat? And let's start from there.
Okay.
It's that simple. It's like, what are you capable of doing? What are you capable of doing endurance-wise? It's all the same thing. It's like, look, you're not going to be doing a high-volume squatting 2-3 days a week for max, working up to a max rep 3 days a week. It's just not going to happen. But, you know, we're going to do some of the lower volume, maybe higher intensity stuff with the squatting maybe a couple days a week. What I've found is that doing 2-3 days a week of strength training in conjunction with short, intense Metcons, that's usually most effective for 3 days a week, and then maybe tossing a WOD in once or twice a week after that, and then your sport-specific work in there as well.
So short, intense Metcons. You also said something about aerobic training. You look at energy systems when you program?
Yes.
You do?
Uh-huh.
You take that into
consideration? Yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Here. Cool. That answers the question.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Thank you. So
titillating.
Ask him, what do you mean by... what's your definition of a short Metcon?
Something under 10 minutes, preferably. That's really intense. You know, it's going to require some monostructural movement, but probably a heavy lift. That's working with what you just lifted strength wise.
And I say that because if you look at CrossFit.com back in 2007 versus CrossFit.com 2013, the volume is a little bit different. And
liar, yeah. Well, there's a lot of people that want to be games athletes now, and you know, and I don't think the game that .com is necessarily saying, hey, you've just got to follow .com to get to the games, but I think they're answering the whole, hey, there's people doing a lot more following other things, so let's toss some more heroes at them.
They're probably looking at that. What do people want? Give them what they want, but for. So you kind of tweaked and found how CrossFit works for endurance athletes. On your website, CrossFit Endurance, I know at one time, because I used to actually, I was way into like programming CrossFit Endurance stuff. Yeah. I went and did the certification, the endurance cert and all that stuff, and I had a really good time with it. And for about a year, I was like way into like programming for marathoners and stuff like that. But I followed the endurance side. Are you still programming the strength training or the CrossFit stuff? And then
Yeah.
And I think one thing that David might have been trying to ask is like when you're preparing an athlete.
Yeah, Dave.
He's so bad at asking questions. I'm gonna get on his case. He's one of our coaches. But when someone's preparing for a race and they're say squatting. I know when I went to the seminar for cross endurance, it was a, I think the prescription for the taper was like 5x5 as an example. I know it's not a same thing for everybody. It's not cookie cutter.
No.
But it was like 5x5 on Monday if you're racing on Saturday. Cutter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How's that? Has that changed at all?
That really hasn't changed. I created the whole thing, but even though we've got a lot of coaches that are involved at this point, I like doing a heavy lift on,
fuck yeah, man,
on a Monday prior to a Saturday race, because I like getting a big hormonal response by race day.
Yeah.
And that essentially is going to be something that's going to hit about that time. You know, that doesn't mean that's Bible.
Right? That's not what everybody should be doing.
That's not law.
If somebody's accustomed to high volume squatting, 5x5, not too bad. But if you got somebody who may not be so accustomed, 5x5 might wreck them for that Saturday race.
Maybe 5x3.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
So there's certainly a point of, there's a requisite amount of strength that you need to be at your best, but there's also a point of diminishing returns where if you squat 0.5 body weight, you're just simply not strong enough. But maybe at 1.5 or 2 or 2.5 times body weight, now you're strong enough, and squatting 3 times body weight or more isn't going to help you. What do you think kind of the ideal per or times body weight squat is? Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. You're asking where that diminishing return is going to be.
Yeah. Like, at what point is strong enough? 2 times body weight?
I couldn't really. It might be around 2 times body weight, but the fact is that may be wrong. And there may be guys who are still getting returns, who are lifting more, who are squatting more than 2 times body weight.
Mm-hmm. What range are you looking for the most part?
I'm looking for what is as heavy as they can get. You know, for the most part, what we see, you know, especially with a lot of the women that I've coached, is that there's just such a lack in strength that has become a primary focus. And then, you know, even with a lot of the guys, it takes years to develop this stuff, but it also takes years to develop real endurance. You know, and so these are things that, as long as you're continuing to progress and work at, the sky's the limit. You know, and where your potential is, and sure. There, you know, if you've got a 400-pound back squat and you're a 180-pound marathoner who's maybe running 3 hours or just under 3 hours, you might want to start lowering that and thinking about that in different terms, like different weight percentages and moving that a little faster versus just trying to get that heavier and heavier lift. Right.
Yeah, it's kind of just think of at what point do you just put back squat on maintenance mode and you don't need to worry too much about getting that specifically stronger, and then you can just ramp up your volume.
I think the point is, and this is what I really, you know, everybody wants that like special like number, like what's going to happen, and it's like, dude, it's so individualized, and the fact is it's your ability to pay attention to your performance, and when that performance starts to deteriorate, be able to answer why. What's going on with me? Is it because I'm screwing around my nutrition right now?
Yeah.
Or is it because I'm squatting heavy because I just buried myself in squats yesterday and now I can't move?
Yeah.
Or is it, you know, so
that's kind of a test, retest, and then make your best educated guess about what you need to change.
And that could be a 2 to 3 week process, essentially.
Okay, so we started to go into nutrition just a little bit, and then I didn't want that woman to have to stand up here forever before she could ask her question. Yeah. But let's go down that track a little bit. I know you have some supplementation company that you work with, or I actually don't even know the full story. So you own it, and that's called what again?
Three Fuel.
And is that entire company, or is that just one specific product line?
One specific product.
Okay, so what is in that, and who's it for?
It's for anybody really training. Okay. Primarily, we wanted to find a fuel source that worked, that we weren't just shoving a bunch of crap into ourselves, because we weren't eating a lot of crap. Therefore, we didn't want to just shove crap into ourselves. We were getting tired of everything that was out there. We, in essence, were helping develop an endurance line with somebody else, and felt that endurance line did not meet up to the standard. We were starting to bonk at about the 2-hour mark. They wanted to go to market with it, so we decided to separate ways. And at that point, we started toying with different things. And that's where we found that the hydrosylate grass-fed protein that we have absorbed quicker. We got a medium chain fat out of coconut milk. And then we found a carb. It's a HDP waxy maize. So it acts like a starch.
Fancy carbs.
It's very fancy carbs. Yeah.
Mercedes Benz carbs.
You know what it was.
I know, dude.
Yeah, fuck yeah, you do.
I knew you knew.
So the carb actually, it gets less of an insulin response than the whey will. Okay. And it takes about 2 hours for that carb to actually start dumping glucose into the system. And literally it picks up where that medium chain fat and the protein are kind of leaving off, right? And so it allows you to just constantly be fueling. Now, if you're pegged for 8 hours in an Ironman, you might need to add some higher, you know, some faster burning carbohydrates.
Yeah.
For 90% of us in an Ironman, that ain't going to be the case. And anything beyond 2 hours, you're just not going to need anything but that. So it literally, and it's something you would take prior to training because it absorbs so quickly and empties out of the gut. Mm-hmm. So we would take it before, and we found that not only with the studies, but even with ourselves, that the recoverability of taking something prior to working out gave us the same benefits as taking it post. Mm-hmm. Because most people are taking something post-workout, they're in a fasted state already.
Right.
So it was just kind of a no-brainer, and we were tired of taking stuff, and we decided to take some of the money we were making and, you know, invest it in something that we gave a shit about.
Okay, so you said for the most part you want to take that pre-workout. But for something like a 100-mile race where you're running 16 hours, how long does that take?
Me actually took about 26 and 27 hours.
Okay. So I was totally guessing. But.
No, there are guys.
Guess an asshole, Doug?
There are guys who can do that.
Okay. So for a race like that, I mean, you gotta eat something that or you're not going to perform very well.
That is literally what you could take the entire race. In fact, there's a guy who just finished, a 100-mile. I put it out on Twitter. I retweeted it from Dr. Tim Noakes. The guy just finished a 100-miler. He just changed his diet up. I'm pretty sure he went paleo, but he definitely removed grain. He literally only intook 1,500 calories in 100 miles. He built his system up, his fueling system so well that he was able. And I mean, for 100 miles, you're not going and it's not like you're squatting. You know, you're just purely aerobic, dude. Yeah. And it's the ability to sustain and metabolize that fat.
Stuff.
You know where I'm at.
What flavors does this come in? This product of yours?
It's pretty much a vanilla coconut.
You got the important questions.
Details. Yeah. You got a mango. You got a coffee buzz.
I will send you some.
Fuck yeah! I'll go out and run, or I'll just lift weights.
That's all he was looking for.
I'll send all three of you guys some.
What about me? I'll get my official endorsement. I'll say, if I was gonna run a race, I would totally take this shit.
There you go.
Are you going to teach? I think we need to have like a session maybe after this where you teach Chris how to run.
No.
I think
that's
this
right.
Would be great.
You could be the demo person in the technique
quad. How about Chris just shows up tomorrow?
We can get
that on film.
I'll bring my Lululemon yoga shorts.
All right, guys.
I got five pairs.
It's about time to wrap it up. We had a great time. I think we could probably podcast for like another 3 hours. Easy.
We can do this all night.
Yeah, so which means we'll just have to have another one.
There you go.
Maybe we'll come out to
Southern California. I got plenty of room for you guys at the house.
Next week.
Excellent.
And we got the donut shop down the street.
Oh, geez.
So we'll get Chris on 3 Fuel and donuts, and he'll run an ultra marathon.
Yes.
Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like we will take
him.
My
we will take him trail running.
What happened to Chris? We lost him on the trails. Cougars got him.
Lots of cougars in California.
There are cougars.
Lots of cougars in Orange County.
Oh, you mean like hot chick cougars? Okay. I got you, bro.
O'Brien, is there anything you want to promote before we head out?
No. Promotion, but thank you guys for having me here. I appreciate it. You guys are doing a hell of a job. I've listened to this quite a few times now. You know, even before you guys approached me and doing this whole thing for CrossFit for Hope, I'm totally for. So make your fucking donations.
That's right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right, guys.
Help some people out.
Thanks for coming out, guys.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep. See you next week. Yeah.
Thanks, Doug.
This turned out really well.